Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Dirt Talk Podcast Monday edition. I'm your host, Aaron Witt, on a mission to make the dirt world a better place, joined by my co-host, Alex Horton.
Hey, y'all.
Coming to you today from the Dirt Talk Studios in Nashville, Tennessee.
BuildWit HQ, what up?
BuildWit HQ. Every single podcast we do, the studio feels better and better and better.
Mm-hmm. I think we're... I'm getting a little bit better at sort of the technical aspects of, you know, what we need to make it a good piece. We're going to be recording our first remote podcast in here this week.
Cool.
Which between now and then, I will have solved all the problems. I've solved it all now. I have to put it together now. But like that's happening. I mean, things are good in here.
Well, and we had our first in-person podcast in here with a guest, Mr. Dylan Taylor. We put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
So now it's in video format.
It's out there in the world, man.
Which is pretty wild.
And that's the first like thing I've ever let me say. I technically did edit that video. However, I basically was watching like tutorials on YouTube as I was going through it.
That's the way to do it.
You know, we got to start somewhere. And one of our guys, Dallas, he did some like killer animations and sent those to me. And it makes it look like a pretty fancy thing, which my part of it was not. But
that helps. Lipstick on a pig.
Oh, man. And let me tell you, some very talented people here at BuildWit that make plenty of us look awesome.
I am the biggest beneficiary of that.
It's true.
Yeah. Everybody asks, like, how do you do it? I'm like, I don't know. There's just a lot of smart people helping me with everything now.
It's like the number one like thing we ask. It's like, hey, hire a good person. And then fingers crossed, they're also really, really good at the thing we need them to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we have great folks. And I'm very excited to finally have the podcast on video.
Yep.
We had Dylan Taylor in. I was coming off of Vegas for one night. So I was a little out of it that morning, but back in Tennessee for 5 days until I started traveling again.
Wow.
Yeah, big stretch here.
Pretty long run here in town.
It makes me feel a little sad inside, but I actually told myself, like, wow, I have 5 days at home? That's awesome. Like, that's a lot of days at home. And then I thought about it. I'm like, oh, no. Like, that's where we're at. 5 days at home. That's exciting. Like,
wow.
I think I need a break because I don't know how much longer I can keep doing this.
See, I'm like the opposite where it's like, you know, you and I went on the road for basically one night, two like pretty long days.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got back, I'm like, man, do I need to take a half day just to like get my brain back on?
Well, fortunately, so it's October now. We have our winter break in December.
Mm-hmm.
And I only I have 2 weeks to travel in December. So I try not to travel in December.
Yeah.
But I have to travel for the first week and then I'm going to go to Arizona, which technically isn't travel.
Well, you don't live there, so it's at least a little travel.
Yeah, but I'm still not in my bed, which isn't ideal. And then our company, we take 2 weeks off around the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Just to shut the company down for 2 weeks.
Which was clutch last year. I mean, I feel like we were just like, riding a bull.
Yeah.
Just like, woo!
Yeah.
And so by the time we got there, I think that was like really healthy for everybody.
It is, and if any business owners are listening to this, probably some of the best money we spend as a company.
Sure.
It's very substantial. Like this year, it'll be safely a six-figure investment to make happen. But, and just payroll, obviously. Yeah. If you establish expectations up front, and that's what I did last year, and that's what I'm going to do again this year. Listen, guys, hey, we are taking and I'll have this conversation with everybody, you know, next week. Mm-hmm. So 2 months prior, we're taking those 2 weeks off. One, plan accordingly. Two, we're going to go 110 miles per hour, 100 miles per hour into that break. There's no slowing down. There's no nonsense. There's just no room for error. We're gonna run into that thing. And then we're gonna take 2 weeks completely off. Take it off, set those expectations to everyone we work with. Hey, we're not working these 2 weeks. I don't care what you need, not happening. And then coming out of the 2 weeks, Everybody is 100 miles an hour again. There's no, oh, how are your holidays and taking 3 days to get back into the groove and this and that. None of that bullshit. You just had 2 weeks off. Let's go get back after it. And that first week back, this earlier this year, was probably our most intense week ever.
I mean, I think just from that point. What we do and we were trying to do, I mean, that was a pretty special week.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, let's go.
We were getting after it. But, but it's nice to just give people 2 weeks with their family. Early on in business, I learned nothing happens in those 2 weeks anyway.
Yeah, it's a waste.
So it is a total waste. It's a total joke having to show up for those 2 weeks. No one is really there. Everybody's on vacation anyway, so you can't get anything back from anybody. You're checked out mentally. You're fried from the year. So I was just like, you know what? Screw this. Let's just take 2 weeks off and actually utilize it for something of value, mm-hmm. which is just creating space, taking time for everybody, spending time with family around the holidays. It's been a no-brainer so far.
Well, I think what also was really helpful just for us as a company was, I think a lot of companies that are not us sort of treat the whole month of December sort of as like a light, kind of let's just get to the holidays, get some of these little outstanding things. And we're like, how about we just go pedal the metal those for those first 2 weeks that end up serving us really, really well because we can get some of our ducks in a row that we maybe like had to put on the back burner in order to, you know, serve these other ends. And so like when we get to that like 2 week break, we all feel like very buttoned up, very like in order so that when we come back, you know, at the beginning of the new year, we're like, let's hit it.
Yeah, we're doing a month's worth of work in those first 2 weeks anyway.
Yeah, except somehow it's like a lot easier because we're like driving the here's how much we want to get done, here's how we want to get it done. You know, I just like even if we're still like doing the things we're doing, it's not like we're necessarily like starting big brand new projects. I don't know, it just didn't feel that way last year and maybe it will this year, but
I mean it's a much bigger group this year than last.
Yeah.
But I'm not all that worried about it at the same time.
Yeah.
And I've just learned in business too, if you don't dictate terms, you are going to be dictated to. So if you don't dictate, hey, we'd take those 2 weeks off, you're not going to get the 2 weeks off with everybody else.
Yeah.
There'd be, and I try to be, you know, if we're going to make this investment in our people, I also try to tee it up as something very intentional with everybody is, hey, you're getting 2 weeks off. Don't take it for granted. Really be intentional about how you spend that time. Don't just sit on your ass for 2 weeks. If that's being intentional, if that's really what you need, cool.
Sure.
Go sit on your ass. I'm not going to tell you what to do. But also, like, take it as a gift. Really spend time with your family. Really do the things you've put off that entire year. Really read the pile of books sitting on your desk that you haven't gotten around to, but you've been dying to read. Like that's the kind of stuff we need to do because that builds up. It's basically an investment in human capital. So if we can go create value in our people's lives and make them more valuable by giving them space to do other things, and 2 weeks is enough time to do that.
Yeah.
A week is not enough, I've found. 2 weeks, you really need 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then they become more valuable human beings, which makes them more valuable for our business. So it's not just us throwing away money. It's actually us investing in our business, investing in our people. And we actually see a return on investment. I don't know if I could ever pencil that out, but I genuinely believe if we tee it up right, set the right expectations, we see a significant return on investment.
Yeah.
So that's our policy on Christmas break.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked. No one's asked about our Christmas break policy.
No one's asked. But it is unique. I haven't found a lot of companies that do it.
Well, I also think like us talking about that stuff for just a second here does like say something about our business.
It does. And you know, when I talk to contractors about it, they always say, well, we're a contractor, we can't do that. But I've thought about that too. I'm like, but can you?
Could you plan for that? I don't know. I'm asking a question, not like
I don't know. Like if you told everybody, if you have, you know, starting on November 1st, you have 8 weeks of work to do. The customer, they just want 8 weeks of work done. They don't care how it gets done. So if you sit everybody down on November 1st and say, hey guys, if here's everything we need to do in the next 8 weeks, if we can knock this shit out in 6 weeks, we can take the last 2 weeks off. And you go, you confirm that, hey, if we do all this, you don't care if we're working last 2 weeks of December or not, right? No, we don't care. We just want it done. Okay, cool. You'd be amazed. I'd be willing to bet maybe 7 out of 10 times. I don't know if it's 9 out of 10 yeah. times, but more often than not, you could get that work accomplished and all of your people would be down to get the work accomplished if they were getting that time off.
Sure.
But I don't know. I'm not a contractor, so.
Yeah. Well, it's what has clearly worked for our business, you know, and so we'll just keep on rolling.
So that's our logic behind Christmas break.
And the other thing that's good is we are having which it feels like we just had our summer whole team meeting here, but mm-hmm. like going into December, we'll have our winter team meeting here
yeah.
in Nashville.
Yeah, we have that December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Nashville.
Which that timing I feel like is going to be so great to be like, all right, y'all, let's go crush these 2 weeks, you know, going into like our, you know, shutting the business down for another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's going
to
be great.
We're going to need to get ahead on podcasts though.
Yeah. Let's say I've got a lot of irons in the fire right now so that I can basically go to you and your assistant, Jessica, and be like, please, please figure this out from a logistics standpoint between now and the end of the year. And I feel like that's like the only way to do it is I have a lot of stuff for you. Please figure a way to put all this on.
Yeah. We're going to need to do a Build With Dirt Talk podcast Christmas special.
Oh man.
This year. Or a holiday special.
Something. Yeah. We're going to figure that out.
We don't trigger people.
Yep. Yeah, you just got to cover your bases. Oh, Lord. Okay. You traveled a little bit last week.
I traveled a little bit. Yeah. I've been trying to spend a little bit more time with family. My mom's moving right now. So I thought I'd go out to Phoenix to help her move.
Sure.
The Balloon Fiesta was going on this past week. If you've never been to the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta, put it on your list. It is so much fun.
I couldn't believe how close they all are to each other. I mean, they're like directly next to each other.
I mean, balloons are running into each other. it is pandemonium. Total pandemonium. Uh-huh. It's hundreds of balloons. I think this year there were 600 balloons in total, all launching in about 2 hours.
Wow.
So it is a spectacle. And a million people come in for this damn thing.
Are these all like hobbyists who just like own a hot air balloon?
A lot of it, yeah. I mean, it'll be like sometimes you'll see like a husband and wife with a hot air balloon.
Just because like they love doing it.
I don't know. Yeah, they take out a second mortgage on their house and go buy a hot air balloon. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, that's actually, that would actually be a great like question for the listeners. It's like, let's take a survey. How much do you think a hot air balloon costs? I have no idea.
I'm sure there you could find them used on the internet.
If you told me $10,000, I'd probably be like, probably. If you told me $500,000, I'd be like, I don't know, probably it's a lot of fabric. Like, I don't know.
I have no idea. I have no idea. They have to be pretty expensive. So we went to that for a day. We just drove out there, me, my mom, my sister, which was a freaking blast. Mm-hmm. I just loved that event. We visited Emery Sapp in Kansas City for a day. We got out and saw a job. They were spreading topsoil off a stockpile with MTS pans pulled by cat trucks, push loaded by a D10, which was sweet.
Wow.
Yeah. They were heaping the shit out of these pans. I mean, they were heaped. They're running, I think, 34-yard and 42-yard pans. So that was very cool.
Yeah.
I don't see those all that often. Definitely a Midwest thing. Those MTS yeah. pans pulled by trucks. So that was cool. And then one of Emery Sapp's subsidiaries, Aiken Gardner, I saw they had a really cool job going on in Phoenix. And so what's happening in Phoenix is the north part of Phoenix, I think it's about 400,000 people. And I looked all this up yesterday while I was on the plane. The north side of Phoenix is fed by the Colorado River. That's where all of the water comes from. The south half of Phoenix is fed by the Verde River and the Salt River. So you have the Central Arizona Project and the Salt River Project. So there are two canals. They look the same, but the water comes from different places. Now, back in the day when the Hoover Dam was created and formed Lake Mead, there was negotiations or whatever it was. And it was, there were certain states and areas that got priority over other states and areas.
Okay.
If you haven't noticed, Lake Mead is at a record low currently, and it is not projected to go a whole lot further anytime soon.
Sure.
So at a certain point, Arizona is far enough down on the list where they get cut off from the water. And so that's 400,000 people without water in the middle of the desert. You need to do something about that.
Yeah, not what you want.
So City of Phoenix has a $250 million pipeline project going on. And they're taking it's a 66-inch force main. So a monster.
Huge.
Like water lines, typically, you'll see them 12, 16, 24-inch. You know, 24-inch water line. There's a lot of water because it's pressurized.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of... there's a lot there.
Yeah.
And that can deliver a lot of water over a 24-hour period. This is a 66-inch main. And it's not... As you increase something in diameter, it's an exponential type growth curve. It's not exactly exponential, but it's not linear.
Mm-hmm.
So when you double from 16 to 32, you don't get double the water. You get many, many, many more times the water. So this is a huge line. They're running from a very large water treatment plant at 24th Street. Many, many miles. They're cutting all the way through some neighborhoods. They're cutting through the entire Phoenix Mountain Preserve, which is crazy. And then they're going up 32nd Street to a pump station to get it to that entire part of the town. Kiewit has a large part of the contract. Kiewit is the construction manager at risk. They bid it to some local firms. Aiken Gardner, who is owned by Emery Sapp, picked up a section of it. So they are laying 66-inch water line. They're digging with a 395. So brand new 395 rented from Empire.
Yep.
They needed a big ass excavator mostly because of the rock. They needed something with ass that could just sit there and just rip and dig. And then the pipe itself is monstrous. So they were laying all the pipe. They have trench boxes. It's all welded metal pipe. So you have to weld every single joint outside and inside. So there's a lot of labor there. And then it's all encased in slurry. All the way up a foot over pipe, mm-hmm. which is a lot of money. So I went out and saw that, and it was extraordinarily unique. But I think you have on one job, there's Aiken Gardner, Kiewit, Garney, very large company, Sunt, McCarthy, and maybe one other outfit. So it's a monster job.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was what I checked out yesterday morning.
That was a good history lesson.
Infrastructure, man. It's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't just appear and it doesn't just happen on accident. There's always a reason for why they're building things most of the time. Again, we've got into the whole high-speed stupid rail thing in California, but most of the time there's good reason for it.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
Got some personal interest, like work stuff, got to hang with the fam for a minute, got to see some more construction, like things are going well in the Aaron Witt world.
The Aiken Gardner thing was funny because I was not expecting to see that. I just saw a post on LinkedIn that they had a part of the project.
And I've been following along.
I'm like, all right, let's get out there. And I had no idea they had a 395. So I show up and sure as shit, there's a 395 sitting in a little neighborhood right next to homes loading out triaxles.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the crew on that job worked for the company I first worked for, Pearson Construction Corporation.
No way.
On the job I first worked for them on. So that was funny.
Like people you recognized?
I didn't work directly with these guys, but after we were talking, I was like, oh yeah, I definitely remember you out there. And it's kind of funny how that works.
That's pretty cool. Nice. Well, we got a couple good questions this week. Let's dive in. Okay, first question. This is from Thomas. I was recently promoted to foreman at an underground mining operation. I've had an issue with the way we do morning safety meetings/tailgate talks in the beginning of shift. Employees just read off a piece of paper or they just wing it and barely say anything. With your experiences across multiple companies and job sites, what are the best type of safety meetings that you've witnessed to work with employee engagement?
Yeah, I think the meetings in which someone just reads off a piece of paper are completely worthless. The most valuable safety meetings I've seen are the ones in which the most people are engaged in, and you're actually creating participation within that safety meeting, an actual thought within that safety meeting. And it's more so a conversation amongst everybody than a supervisor preaching to craft to satisfy legal and insurance requirements.
Yeah. It's like, I'm required to read this to you. So listen or not, I don't care.
Yeah. And yeah, that doesn't exactly scream safe culture.
No.
Safety bothers me a little bit because I feel like today it's more so about liability and insurance than it is about actual safety.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of ranting about that, the best safety meetings I've seen, like I said, have engagement. So I saw one, and I'll give Brett Baker, he's been on the podcast with Rosso. He every time I've been around on a safety meeting with him, he leads really, really good safety meetings because he doesn't sit there and say, okay, here's everything, let's go to work. He says, all right, guys, here's what's going on today. Here's what we need to accomplish. Let's just go around the circle and let's talk about what we need to be looking out for today. And he'll just go around the circle and everybody in that group will have to point out something that they just need to be aware of or look out for, or something they saw the day before or whatever it may be. And they have a conversation about it. Everybody's engaged. Everybody's critically thinking about the work. And everybody is coming together as a team. Mm-hmm. And you're building that team dynamic, which I think is extraordinarily valuable.
Yeah.
And I was very, very impressed when I saw that for the first time. Another time, one that really sticks out to me too, is we were with Rommel one morning. They're a contractor in Phoenix, big earth moving contractor. And we had they had a huge scraper spread running for a flood control project. Just tens of thousands of yards a day, all 631s, 657s. It was a badass job.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably had 40 or 50 people on this job. It was sizable.
Wow. Yeah.
The safety meeting was probably 30 or 45 minutes. And it was nothing crazy. The job, it wasn't all that complicated. Mm-hmm. It was just mass excavation in the middle of nowhere. I don't know what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mass excavation in the middle of nowhere. It's same kind of thing over and over and over. So it wasn't like the workflow was all that different than the day before, the day that's going to come after. And yet they just sat there and had a very meaningful, thoughtful conversation. And that goes a long way to saying I really care as a supervisor, for example, is if you really just have a conversation and allow other people to come up with what's going on and come up with the plan. This is what we talked to Jocko about. And this mm-hmm. is on Build It Leaders, is allowing other people to, okay, hey, here's the work we have to do. How would you guys make sure we do this? And then what are the things we need to be thinking about from a safety concern? And facilitate it from a supervisor perspective, but put it back on the people actually doing the work. I think you're going to get a much more meaningful conversation and you're going to have a much safer workforce than if you just preach from a piece of paper. And I think people, they want to be part of a community. They want to look out for one another. They want to be part of a tribe. Mm-hmm. So if you tap into that from a safety standpoint and build that community, build that common sense of respect and teamwork throughout the team, and your safety meeting is probably your best chance at that from an operator standpoint, because those guys, they get in their cabs and they're in their cabs the next 10, 12 hours. They're not working directly with one another. That's your best opportunity to create that cohesion. And if you have that cohesion, people are looking out for one another, and you actually have a really safe, productive place to work.
To me, like, what makes sense from a safety perspective is the approach of, instead of saying, I'm going to be safe so that I'm going to practice like safe practices and, you know, really focus on that. I'm not going to focus on that to keep just me safe. I'm focusing on that to like keep my team safe.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. And I think like that's, I think if like I'm listening to somebody just read me a piece of paper about like, here's today's safety tip of the day or whatever, I think I'm more likely to just be like, okay, so this is what I need to do. as opposed to if I'm engaged in a conversation and like feel that I'm not just in that conversation, but in the, like the process and the approach and attack way of attack that we're going to, you know, work on this job today. I think the more likely that I'm thinking, you know, what does my role have to do with, you know, keeping my team safe in order for us to, you know, complete the thing we're wanting to complete.
Yeah. I don't think you can have safety if everybody's just out for themselves. I would have been seriously injured many times over if I didn't have people watching out for me.
Yeah.
And saying, I just saw you doing that. Don't do that again. Here's why. It's very clear. And if they weren't teaching me and caring for me and looking out for me, I would have been put in very hazardous positions many, many times over. I don't know. Or in safety meetings, this is another good example. When we're out there, we're clearly a hazard or a potential hazard.
Potential hazard.
We're not a hazard. We're a potential hazard. And we're oftentimes a topic at every safety meeting we're a part of when we go out to job sites.
Sure.
The times in which I feel the most safe and I'm most impressed with the culture and the safety culture are when whoever's leading that safety meeting says, hey guys, just so you know, we have build it out this morning. It's these guys right here. Hey, Aaron, can you address the group? Can you talk about what you guys are going to be doing today and what to look out for so everybody's aware? They invite me into the safety conversation. And because I'm the most informed one there on what we're going to be doing, I can speak to it very clearly and say, hey, let's just make sure we're going to be out on the ground here, here, here. We're going to be looking for you guys. If you wouldn't mind looking for us, we're not going to put ourselves in any weird situations, but just be on the lookout. We'll maintain radio contact with you guys. If you see us doing something, please let us know. I have a radio here. I'll make sure, what channel are you guys on? Okay, good. We're on the same channel. If we have that kind of dialogue, I think everybody is a hell of a lot more comfortable than if that person says, hey, build it out here and this is what they're going to be doing. Look out for them. Okay, check. It's like,
it would be easy to just like never think about that ever.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I guess those are my thoughts on safety.
Yeah. I think that's really valuable and really interesting.
And I mean, a safety conversation doesn't always have to be just slips, trips, and falls. Like, apply some creativity to it too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't always just have to be business. Like, creating a team, a cohesive team, that's a safe place to be a lot of times. So how can you create cohesion? How can we also talk about what the hell we just did over the weekend? You know, or talk about a leadership topic. Maybe something like that. Or recognize someone for kicking ass the day before. Hey, you guys, man, this individual really went out above and beyond. And I really appreciate that. A safety meeting is a lot more than an opportunity to just talk about slips, trips, and falls. So treat it as such and actually think about every chance you have to address the group as a supervisor, because that's a chance to create the team you need to go kick ass out.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a daily stand-up, you know, like a lot of more like office-based companies where it's like just so everybody kind of knows what they're working on, what role that task plays in the broader goal of the team. And like that to me, like that's what the, like, you know, the tailgate talk is, or could be, I should say, should be, is just like a time for everybody to kind of maybe personally connect. But I mean, like, from like, here's our tasks, here's all our roles today, here's why they go together, here's how they go together, and here's why like safety is part of that.
I guess that makes me think of another thing too, that we work with a mining company and they share near misses and incidents throughout the organization.
Yeah.
So they'll have it posted in their offices and they'll discuss if a mine has a near miss over in, you know, five states over, they'll discuss it at the other mines across the
country.
Yeah. So it's leveraging, you know, if it's just making sure there's that communication too. Whereas if you're at a large company, or you know, he said he's at an underground mine, so just keep up to date on MSHA incidents. They're published. They're public knowledge. Take advantage of those and use those to talk about once a week. And it sucks. They happen. Those accidents, they're there, or else They happen or else they wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
So leverage those to teach your people before it's your company as well and have a conversation about those. I see that a lot. And I think that's a good.
That's a great point about the MSHA. Like
they're all there.
It's there for a reason, you know, and like find a way that it makes sense for you guys.
That's why I'm so diligent about wearing my seatbelt. I heard one story that scared the shit out of me about some guy dying that shouldn't have, not a single piece of broken glass on a machine, flipped it, and should have been going home to his, you know, family, and didn't because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. That was enough for me. I'm wearing my seatbelt nonstop, yeah, every single
every time.
Every single time. And I just, you know, it just paid off for me when I just rolled that machine.
Yeah.
Because if I wasn't wearing my seatbelt, I would have been hurting. I would have been hurt.
Cool. Well, Thomas, thanks for reaching out, man. And congrats on the promotion to foreman. Okay, this is a question from Daniel, Birmingham, Alabama. I'm going to read a little bit of background because I think it's just stuff we want to hear. Says, first off, I can't thank you guys enough for what you're doing. I've been working in this industry for 4 years in Mississippi and Alabama and almost quit because of frustration with employers. And I thought all contractors treated employees poorly because of my experience. Stumbled upon BuildWit, I think through a Let's Dig video, and my whole perception of the industry has changed.
Hear that, Chris?
So many exciting things going on in the industry that I had no idea existed. Had it not been for you guys, I'm not sure I would have stuck with it. I'm now very excited to prove my friends wrong who told me I couldn't make a living, quote unquote, digging holes. My question is this. I think two of the most inhibiting factors for younger people like myself getting into the dirt world are the fact that many civil contractors work at least 6 days a week, mostly 7 and 12 to 15 hour days, and then lay people off in the winter / don't provide hours for employees when it rains. I understand this is from a company's perspective as well as in that if it's raining or snowing and you can't work, then you're not making money. So it's tough to pay labor. In your experience, what do contractors do to keep people working in rainy months? And how do they make work weeks shorter while still staying efficient?
The good contractors, they try to create opportunities to retain people and get work during winter months to keep the people that want to stay busy, busy. That's reality. I think there's a lot of contractors that just accept like, hey, nope, we just lay everybody off. That just is how it is or is what it is. People like it. Not everybody likes it. People want to work year round. And I think the really solid contractors, they actually deliberately bid work to find jobs that they know they can work in winter a lot of times. They adjust their work to accommodate people in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have programs in the winter where instead of working, they're training. Or they're doing a lot of maintenance and your job looks a little bit different. Maybe you're a pipe layer in the summer, but you're helping to maintain the dump truck fleet in the winter. Southern Site has a really, really good program where they have a rain day program.
Yeah.
So instead of bonuses, they basically take the money you'd get at the end of the year and even it out through the year because they recognize that people... They want consistent income. That's very important, especially when you have bills and people to support. So if you have 2 rain days, you'll get paid for those days. You have an allotment of rain days. I think there's like 30 days in a year.
Yeah.
And if you're rained out, you use one of those rain days. So you still get paid. And if you go the entire year without using all of the rain days, then you get paid out in a bonus, whatever you didn't use. They're evening out people's paychecks while still, in theory, paying people what they would be normally.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense in Tennessee where it does rain a lot, but also it rains a lot in a way that you can't work in it.
Yeah.
You know, so they got...
Correct.
It behooves them to have a plan like that.
Correct. Yeah, but even in Tennessee, you can still strategically bid some work that you can do when it's wet. And I know it's not perfect, but I think the best companies, they try to keep their people working as much as they can, mm-hmm. as consistently as they can. They don't accept that weather is just a reality or winter is just a reality or sorry, we didn't pay you for 5 days because it was raining. Oh, well, they're they're making it their responsibility to care for their people however they can. There are companies out there that make it work pretty damn well. I've seen it.
Yeah.
They're not the majority, but they're the majority of the companies we work with for damn sure.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, like I'll know, you know, like Rosso, for example, when COVID looked a little wonky and they had a lot of commercial work get paused beginning of last year, Dylan was like, I'm not letting anybody go. So he was paying guys to, you know, sweep wherever they could find, do work that wasn't really real work that mm-hmm. they were getting paid for, just to retain those people and care for those people because the work was going to come back. And when it did, they needed those people there.
They needed those people.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said it on the last podcast, and I'm going to start beating on this drum a little bit more. I am more than okay with encouraging people to leave bad companies and go to good companies. Because that's what needs to happen in the industry. Like I said, people need to feel pain. These companies need to feel pain or else they're not going to change. They're feeling pain from a labor perspective right now. They're starting to feel it even more. The companies that are treating their people right, they're not going to have that labor problem. They're going to be able to absorb those people from those bad companies and they're going to grow and take that market share, and the market in theory will correct itself.
Mm-hmm.
And those bad companies will either figure it out through feeling that pain and missing deadlines, or they will just go away. I'm okay with either one. I'm okay with either one. It sure needs to happen. And I'm starting to get a little tired of the same conversation, same labor conversation over and over and over again. So is it like a one size fits all solution? No, but I think there are a lot of companies out there that sincerely care for their people and sincerely are trying to even out the reality that we work outside, we deal with the elements, there is winter, but at the same time, that doesn't mean people can just not get paid for 3 months, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully that's helpful. I mean, those were some examples. And you know, there's a lot of people that do want to get laid off for 3 months and go ice fishing, like in Minnesota or wherever, snowmobiling. Cool. Like there's that group, but there's also this other group that doesn't want to get laid off. They want to go ice fishing.
Continue, keep making money.
Yeah, yeah. Go ice fishing for 2 weeks, you know, around Christmas. But otherwise, like, I want to work more. Let's go. And some companies too. I mean, like some companies, for example, they'll plow snow in the winter.
Yeah.
They won't make any money, but they'll at least keep their operators busy. Cool. That's them caring for their people. That's another opportunity. So I think that's the difference, is the companies that really, really care for giving their people what they need, seek those other opportunities that might not be great for the company every single time, but are good enough for their people and for giving their people what they need through winter months, wet months.
Well, you know, and that sort of approach, I think, is very much like in line with, you know, our mission to make the dirt world a better place. You know, like they're actively like taking care of their people because it's like the right thing to do, and it makes their company better. You know, like if they're having to, you know, go hire like a brand new workforce, if they had to, you know, lay off a bunch of people that for a long winter, what's to say a lot of those people don't get picked up by another company who can pay them through the layoff?
Sure.
You know, like obviously not everybody would do that, but like at some point that like hurts a business, mm-hmm. right? And so I think it's interesting, you know, the companies that do have, you know, these different programs or different ways that they handle kind of that off season or whatever in order to serve their people. I think that's fascinating.
Well, and you're not going to, as a contractor, you're not going to be able to afford to lay people off anymore.
Yeah.
You're going to need to retain those people because, like you just said, they might not come back because other people are going to be figuring out how to retain them if they want to be retained. You know, it's. You're not going to have that option. You're going to have to be more disciplined when it comes to labor and caring for people as a contractor, or you're not going to be a contractor much longer. I don't know when that's going to happen, but that's where things are going. People ask my opinion. What do you see? That's what I see.
That's what you're seeing.
That's what I see.
Yep. Well, you know, it's like we've said many times, we're a couple of jabronis just talking.
That's it.
But you and a lot of people in our company see a shit ton of job sites.
We see a lot of job sites.
A lot of different companies.
But look at the questions you're getting on the podcast from people out in the field. What are they thinking about? What are they worried about? What are they asking about? What do they want? They want to be cared for. They want to work for great companies. You know, don't take it for us. Just even look at the questions we get. That's where the temperature's at.
I should do some sort of, I should go through all of the emails we've gotten in the past year and like come up with like the most asked kinds of questions because they're basically what we read today.
That's it, man. That's it. That's the temperature of the industry. Everybody, sure, there are some bitter assholes out there and this and that. Most people, they like working here. Most people, they want to make a career here. Most people, they want to be cared for and appreciated and make the dirt world a better place alongside us. I think that's where most people are at least this next generation, you know? And I speak on their behalf because, sure, older generation, appreciate them. They have more knowledge than I'll ever have in my lifetime. They've got the industry here, but also they're not the future. You know, they have a limited amount of time left here.
Yeah.
And we need to transition, succession plan, and look to the future. And the future wants something a little bit different. And that's okay. We're not saying, and the future is not saying, I want to work less and work less hard. But they are saying, I want a consistent paycheck. I might, you know, I want to see my daughter a little bit more. I think those are pretty reasonable things to ask for.
Yeah.
I think that is pretty reasonable. And if it's not, then maybe I'm a misguided moron, but I don't think that's all that crazy.
I'm with you. I mean, those are the kinds of questions we get all the time. And if it's not like those are questions from people who are who are not in the industry, but are like, you know, have a friend who's in it. These are people like literal boots on the ground. And if that's what they're thinking about, like it's probably likely that a lot of other people are having that same conversation.
I'm privy to a lot of those conversations. I know what kind of conversations.
Yep.
Cool.
Cool. Well, Daniel, thanks for reaching out, man. And thanks for the kind words. I think that is a podcast, my guy.
Super. Thanks for the questions, guys. If you have questions or thoughts for us, send them off to dirttalk@buildwit.com. If you have random stuff to send us, hats, stickers, shirts, whatever you want, send it to Buildwit 1400 Adams Street, number 202, Nashville, Tennessee, 3720.
There you go.
And with that, we'll see you on the next episode of Dirt Talk. Stay dirty, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.